This is Blood, Lead, and Soil, a year in East Chicago from Indiana Public Broadcasting. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for joining us this hour as we examine the past, present, and future of East Chicago's lead contamination crisis. And a reminder, you can see much more of this story, videos, exclusive interviews, maps, documents, and more online at this station's website. And you can let us know what you think of the show anytime using the hashtag #AYearInEC. We're going to be hearing from several Indiana Public Broadcasting reporters who have been covering this story, and first in to give us some background is our environmental reporter, Nick Jansen. Nick, the neighborhood we're talking about here is called Calumet, and it's part of an Environmental Protection Agency Superfund site. Can you start, please, by telling us what that means?
Right. So Superfund sites are really heavily contaminated pieces of land. This is typically leftover industrial pollution. And there's a really long process that the EPA goes through to get a site listed as a Superfund. But once they are, EPA goes in, they determine how contaminated the site is, which pollutants are there, and they come up with a plan to clean it up. They also try to figure out who is responsible for the contamination and try to get those companies to help pay for it, although that's a fairly tricky legal process to go through.
So what is the problem with this particular site, and when did they decide to go ahead and actually designate it as a Superfund?
So it became a Superfund site in 2009, although the EPA and IDEM, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, knew about the contamination at least as far back as 1985. The problem in East Chicago at the USS Lead Superfund site is lead and arsenic dust left over from smelters and refineries that used to operate in the neighborhood. In some soil samples taken, the EPA found lead and arsenic contamination over 100 times what the federal government considers safe. Now, remember, these factories have been operating since the early 1900s into the 80s, so a lot of residents are really worried that this contamination goes back generations.
And we're going to talk more now about the health effects of that contamination. I'm joined by our digital producer, Lauren Chapman. And Lauren, you spoke recently with one of the residents who's been dealing with some of those effects. Is that right?
That's right, Stan. I sat down with Maritza Lopez. The Superfund site is divided into three zones, and she's lived in the third zone her whole life. She actually read me the whole list of her health problems.
Seizures, diabetes, I'm severely anemic. Fibromyalgia, myopathy, vertigo, rheumatoid arthritis, and osteochondrosis, bursitis, knee problems.
It was a really long list. Maritza has also had breast cancer, and doctors recently found lead, arsenic, and cadmium in her bones and blood. And she told me she's frustrated that she and her neighbors haven't gotten more help with their health problems, which she attributes to living in the Superfund site.
The fact that no concerns or continued testing to find out what are the cause and effect of everything caused me to check into it, because I started questioning after speaking with residents. Same cancer, same leg jerk, same eye pressure, same green stuff coughing up in the morning, especially after it rains. So yes, I'm a humble community servant, but very vocal. I refuse, otherwise I'd be just as culpable as the responsible parties and turning a blind eye, and my conscience won't allow that.
You had talked about friends and neighbors who had died extremely young, mm-hmm. As a result of these health problems. How young are we talking?
Well, I recall a grade school friend. Her name was Gloria. She passed away in seventh grade from a brain tumor. Three doors down, high school friend, grade school friend, her name was Kathy, passed away from stage 4 breast cancer at the age of 15. I mean, we were kids. We were always playing in the dirt. We would go into the woods there. We had a fort. You know, this isn't coincidental. It is just common sense and logic. My home no longer feels like a safe haven. And this is my family home. I could look to that chair and see my mom. But I don't feel safe anymore in it. And they knew about this and they didn't dare to. Doesn't even appear in my paperwork disclosing this is a Superfund site when I closed on the house in 2012.
you've mentioned before that there have been, you know, good things in the last few months, especially with communication between the community and federal agencies. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The big breakthrough, and I see it as a breakthrough. Others might not, because they don't see the movement fast enough, was when Administrator Pruitt came. The fact that he chose this to be the first Superfund site.
That he visited.
Yeah. That he took the opportunity to meet with some of us. We have been meeting with Governor Holcomb. That established a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. Then with Administrator Pruitt, the same thing.
Yeah.
He's really taking notice, and this isn't about politics. This is how I feel as a resident, as a taxpayer. It's not about politics. You give me a lending ear and I see you doing something, I'm going to say, and I'm going to give you acknowledgement for that.
Especially somebody who isn't super familiar with what the community advisory group does, can you explain what they are fighting for?
Well, first of all, community advisory group, a CAG, that allows us to place demands, concerns with EPA, and they have to listen to the residents that live here to be able to fix what's going on. So we're talking from federal, state, county, city, all levels of government. Yeah. So what we're about are meetings. We raise different discussions about the cleanup, what EPA's doing and all that. If we need to help push legislature like we have. Mm-hmm. We've been involved, signed on with House Bill 1344 with Earl Harris here in the state, here for East Chicago. And we worked with him too on it, on different language. And that just got signed on May here at Riley Park.
Yeah.
So we're happy to see that the residents are finally having the key role in this. But we had to put ourselves to the door.
So, looking back a year ago, where did you think that we would be now? And where do you think that you'll be a year from now?
I would expect it more unity. For people to support the pain and suffering that the residents have come through. And I'm talking from elected officials to ministry to see their key involvement in this. Mm-hmm. The elected officials, I put you there. You can't even return a phone call. If you can't, it's not personal. And that's one thing I say, it's not personal. This is business. Mm-hmm. And the business is our livelihood. Things have not gotten done how they should. It's been internal battles within the agencies themselves. One's being like a stubborn child, throwing tantrums, refuses to talk to the other one. They have delayed a lot. They're refusing to speak with us. Now, how I see myself next year, to be upfront, my gut feeling is telling me I'm going to lose my house. Although I recognize that's the safest thing for me, health-wise. But nobody could replace what I've lost. And I understand the same thing for the people in West Calumet. A lot of people, I don't appreciate the fact that EPA and IDEM allowed the corporate, the responsible parties to divide the Superfund site into zones. Because originally, according to FOIA records, it was one Superfund site. And they allowed them for money to be cleaned up, and that caused additional division among the community itself. So, in a year's time, I had a feeling I won't be in this house. You know, we lost property value. I don't even have equity in my home. All because of this.
Marissa Lopez is a community servant and lifelong resident of East Chicago's Zone 3 Superfund site. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
That's reporter Lauren Chapman speaking there with Calumet resident Marissa Lopez. And you're listening to special coverage from Indiana Public Broadcasting. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Lauren's still with me in the studio. And Lauren, we heard Marissa talk powerfully emotionally about her health problems and how she feels. Some people, like new EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, are working with the residents there, and some others, like local elected officials, are not even taking their phone calls. And then we heard her talk about how she thinks that medical tests finding elevated levels of lead in her blood and bones are because of all of the things that were deposited at the Superfund site. But is it even clear that those medical conditions are necessarily a result of living there?
Unfortunately, it's not. Just from a health perspective, there hasn't been a ton of research on how all of these contaminants affect the human body together. Individually, we know a lot about these contaminants. There are different ways that lead, for example, can get into your body. It's a really big problem, especially for small children. Lead tastes sweet, and so kids playing in the dirt can consume lead, and dirt getting tracked into homes and construction work can get that contamination into the dust. And as a result, the EPA has set up a lot of signs basically instructing residents, you know, not to play with the dirt, not to mess around with the dirt. And originally they had put down a lot of mulch. And as a result of all of the movement in the area, most of that mulch is gone. And so the signs are the only thing that remain. There's also some question as to whether or not this particular contamination has affected the city's water at all, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program.
So I think people understand generally that if you're exposed to lead or arsenic or cadmium, it's bad for you. What exactly does that sort of contamination cause in a human body?
So people are especially vulnerable to lead at a very young age. Lead exposure can lead to issues with growth and development and even hearing loss under the age of 6. But adults can also have issues with memory loss and seizures, and lead affects nearly every single system in the body. Specifically with arsenic, people develop vertigo and digestion problems, and arsenic has been linked to liver damage, although the extent hasn't quite been proven yet.
And I understand there's research that's being conducted with residents from the Superfund by Purdue University scientists. What are they hoping to find out?
So their initial test was to validate a bone lead scanner. There are only 3 in the entire country, and they've built a mobile version of it, but they had to test the accuracy of it. But they're now also in the beginning stages of a multidiscipline study with the community through the lens of social science, epidemiology, and toxicology.
So, Lauren, how is it, after all this time that we've known of the health risks of lead and arsenic, how don't we have any more specifics about what those chemicals do to the human body?
Well, I think in the case of arsenic, we all recognize that arsenic is a poison. But when it comes to lead, we've only recently removed lead from many of our daily products. It wasn't until 1973 that we actually removed lead from paint. And it wasn't until 1996 that unleaded gasoline became the industry norm. And so from a research perspective, we just haven't had a population in order to study the individual effects. And because there are so many factors that come together for community health, it just becomes more and more difficult for researchers to pin down exactly what lead is doing.
We heard Maritza mention a lack of communication with government agencies. Did the government actually notify residents about the Superfund site and the fact that there might be health implications to that?
So that's a little complicated. The EPA has documents and flyers that they sent out dating back to 2003. But from the folks that we've talked to, those documents didn't make it into all of the residents' hands. What has improved in the last year is the establishment of a community advisory group and other community organizations that work with the EPA and HUD and get regular communication back and forth between federal agencies, local agencies, and residents.
That's digital producer Lauren Chapman, who's been covering health in East Chicago over the last year. Lauren, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, Stan.
After the break, we'll hear from a former resident of the West Calumet housing complex about having to leave her home because of the contamination and how it's changed the neighborhood where she grew up. And don't forget, you can also find more of this story online, including a visit to the Calumet neighborhood's annual block party.
If you ever live in Calumet, it's like home. You're going to always come back to Calumet.
See that story and more at this station's website, and stay with us. This is Blood, Lead, and Soil, A Year in East Chicago, from Indiana Public Broadcasting. This is Blood, Lead, and Soil, a year in East Chicago from Indiana Public Broadcasting. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're going to talk now about the economic side of this story. Business reporter Annie Ropeek is with me in the studio. And Annie, the EPA has identified a couple of what they call potentially responsible parties. Is that right?
Yeah, so these are companies that own or have owned the factories that left behind all the toxins in the ground in the Superfund site. In East Chicago, those are Atlantic Richfield, which is part of BP, and DuPont. And they're paying the EPA for some of the cleanup, at least $26 million so far.
And those companies, along with the EPA, agreed to divide that Superfund into three parts.
Yeah, so there are three zones. The first one is Zone 1. That's West Calumet Housing Complex, which is a public housing project. And the other two zones are private residential areas.
So how has that public housing complex become one of the focal points of what's happened in the last year?
So the EPA measured some of the highest levels of lead and arsenic anywhere in the Superfund in the housing complex's soil, to the point that they wanted to do some kind of rapid response cleanup there last year. And people don't always have to move out or relocate while they're doing that. But when East Chicago's mayor, he's Anthony Copeland, found out about those really high lead and arsenic levels, he decided it couldn't possibly be safe for people to keep living in West Calumet Housing Complex. So he sent them all a letter telling them that they had to move out.
And how many families is that?
It was more than 300 families, about 1,100 or 1,200 people. And one of them is Keisha Daniels. She's lived in the Superfund her whole life. She grew up in Zone 2, which is a residential neighborhood, and she raised her youngest son in the housing complex, Zone 1. When we spoke recently, she said the mayor's letter was the first she'd heard of any contamination.
Well, I was devastated because it was just like we were blindsided. We didn't know anything about this lead. And I felt like getting this letter telling me I had to move, and I'm like, move where? You know, East Chicago, I was born and raised here, 28 years in Zone 2. I've never been outside of East Chicago. I've never lived outside of East Chicago.
So your first thought is, where am I going to go?
Yeah, where are me and my kids going? If you wanted us to stay in East Chicago, you should have made sure that there were homes for us to move into.
So tell me a little bit about how hard that process was of finding somewhere to go.
I think I was looking for a place roughly about 3-4 months before I actually found somewhere to move. The biggest thing was trying to find somewhere that I could fit my family into. You know, it was a lot of people looking for 3 bedrooms. Didn't want to move too far out of the area because my grandmother, my mom, my family is here. So regardless of it being contaminated with lead, I was like, well, I'm already contaminated. So
after all that, you ended up using your voucher, a Section 8 voucher?
It's a Section 8 voucher, yes.
Within the Superfund, and there is still a contamination concern here.
Yes.
Why was this the place that you felt safest settling?
I'm not going to say I felt the safest settling, but it was home. You know, it's not too far from where I grew up. It's not too far from my granny in case she needs me. You know, so I was kind of, and then I didn't want my son that's 13 to change schools. We have ADHD, and he's been with the same teachers since first grade. He's been in the same building with the same special ed teachers that help him out. And I thought moving him away, that was my biggest concern, was not moving him out of his comfort zone.
So you said you don't exactly feel safe here, just say for what kind of concerns do you still have about contamination, about being in the Superfund?
My biggest thing is I feel like we need a health clinic here that specifically is just for people with lead and arsenic poisoning, just to get us tested, you know, because a lot of us still haven't been tested for arsenic. I'm one of them. You know, I also felt like they should have followed a lot of the people that they let move out of the state. You know, it's like these people have just disappeared. You know, they don't show up for meetings. They're not sending them the information. That was something that I felt like we needed an open line of communication from EPA to housing, from HUD. You know, it needs to still be out there because we're still suffering. And everybody is going on. Everybody's going back home to their clean homes. And then the people are just like scattering everywhere and no one knows what's going on with them and their children, especially the children, you know, adults. I have to fight for myself. But my children, that's a different fight because I'm never going to give up on what's going on with my children. We're still battling. I have a son. He's living in a house full of lead. And I went into that complex with a healthy child. And I feel like the people that did this to him, they should pay for him. They should pay to take care of him and make sure he's okay for the rest of his life because I didn't do it. I could see if I was on drugs or if I was doing something that caused him to be the way that he is. But I went into a complex not knowing. I didn't know. I didn't know I lived on top of a lead refinery. Living here, it may be killing me, you know, but where do we have to go? You know, I hear about people, oh, we moved here. I moved to Hobart. I moved here. But you're still sick. No matter where you go, if you have lead and arsenic in your body, no matter where we go, it's not leaving. You know, but I feel like everybody should stay here and fight. Even if you can't live here, just come back and fight and show us some support on what's going on. And they let people move out of those homes with the furniture and the clothes and the sick children. And I just feel like, you know, they all dropped the ball. Housing, HUD, the city, everybody. Everybody that's ever known has dropped the ball. But they chose to remain in silent and watch people die just months after month, year after year, and nobody said anything.
What would you like to see happen to that complex next?
I don't know. Because I just feel it's so contaminated. If my grandmother's land isn't contaminated right there, by the time you get done, it will be.
If you demolish it.
If you demolish it the way that they're going to try and do things. It just didn't make any sense to me. I'm not an expert. I'm not a scientist. But just looking, this complex is so contaminated. You can't tell me that stuff is not going to get in the air and affect all of those senior citizens that own their homes.
If they were able to find a safe way to tear it down, and the cleanup kind of proceeds as planned, and you know they're able to restore the neighborhood, what do you think is going to happen to the city kind of as you knew it as a result of this? I mean, if all of the cleanup transpires, what effect is that going to have had on East Chicago's economy and the community?
I think in the back of everyone's mind, it'll always have a negative effect, because if you stand in a meeting and tell me it'll never be 100% clean or free of lead, I don't know what they're going to do with that ground, with those grounds.
So a year ago, where did you think you would be now? And then where do you think you'll be a year from now?
I don't know. I used to be saying, oh, when I turn 50, I'm going to be doing this. I can't say that. Hopefully in a year, me and my children are out of here. If I can find somewhere to go.
In town, you think? No?
Mm-mm. If my health keeps going in the direction that it's going, I can't stay here. It's going to be hard trying to find somewhere to go. And I'm just, like I always say, I'm worried about my children. I'm not so much worried about myself, because I know whatever's going to happen to me is going to happen. But they deserve a chance to have a good life and a healthy life. As long as they're fine, I'll make myself be fine.
That was East Chicago resident Keisha Daniels speaking with our business reporter Annie Ropeek. You're listening to Blood, Lead, and Soil, A Year in East Chicago from Indiana Public Broadcasting. Annie's back with us in studio. And tell me if you would, Annie, how did this part of the Superfund site being public housing affect everything that happened to the people who live there?
So that's the first thing, Stan, to know about West Calumet Housing Complex. Officials all say they've never dealt with something like this before, a public housing complex in a Superfund site. It's owned by the city's housing authority. They're the landlord, but HUD kind of oversees and funds what they do there. The EPA manages the Superfund aspect, and even demolition of the complex, if it happens, would be done by a contractor. So it's a big mess. The HUD administrator who's been dealing with East Chicago, his name is Jim Cunningham, and he's been saying all along that this is unprecedented. I asked him about it at a hearing on the demolition plan back in June.
Absolutely it is. I mean, I think one of the questions, have you ever demolished on a Superfund site? The answer is probably no, not at least not that I'm aware of.
And as far as demolition goes, HUD took questions from residents at that hearing, and they're working on finalizing their environmental assessment of the demolition plan. There's no real timeline for next steps there. But in the bigger picture, Jim Cunningham acknowledges that all these agencies have gotten bogged down in procedural steps and maybe haven't done such a good job of engaging with residents on their bigger concerns. And he says they want to be better at that. The EPA and HUD actually also just signed an agreement on cooperating better in future situations like this.
But if Jim Cunningham says they're still figuring out what that collaboration should be like, what did that mean during the year that families such as Keisha Daniels' family were spending trying to move?
Yeah, it made things really hard. The city's letter this time a year ago basically just told families they had to move, that the housing authority was asking the federal government to give out those Section 8 housing vouchers that they could use on other affordable housing. But it took weeks before residents were actually able to sit down with officials one-on-one to figure out what all those details would look like. Keep in mind, a lot of families like Keisha's were learning about the lead problem in their homes for the first time at the same time. So the EPA had cleaned inside some of their homes, the ones with the worst contamination, but this was still scary.
I guess we should talk for a second about the residents. The whole neighborhood is mostly poor. It's a majority-minority community. Do the residents feel like that has contributed to that lack of communication that we heard Maritza Lopez and Keisha Daniels both mention?
Yeah, it's absolutely on their minds. It's a really hard thing to prove, of course, but residents do often bring up these claims of discrimination, marginalization at meetings with federal officials. And the government does consider East Chicago to be an environmental justice community. It's sort of this wishy-washy term that means they're supposed to be doing more to make sure these already marginalized people aren't being disproportionately affected by a situation like this.
So as part of that, when the housing complex residents were not getting what they felt like they needed to relocate, they got together, they filed a federal fair housing complaint. Tell us what that did.
That's right. So residents had some lawyers from the Sargent Shriver National Center on Poverty Law in Chicago ask HUD and the city for more time and help for families to move out. And that was settled last November. It got residents the time, but the help was a lot tougher to secure. I talked to housing justice attorney Kate Walls at the Shriver Center. She says they wanted families to get to move to what she calls healthy communities. And here's how she defines those.
Healthy soil, water, air, and low crime, and good schools, and an opportunity for growth and for someone to realize their full potential.
So obviously not every resident managed to move somewhere like that. Like, we have Keisha still living in the Superfund site. And Kate Wall says they weren't really successful there partly because of delays in getting these special relocation counselors, which the city was supposed to hire. It's also legal in Indiana for landlords to refuse to rent to people who are paying rent with Section 8 housing vouchers, which in the end were the main tool that people like Keisha really had. So like Keisha said, she and her neighbors have scattered all over the region, all over the country. And Kate Wall says now she's hoping to work with officials on a second move program for people like Keisha who maybe didn't end up where they wanted to be. That could help Keisha, who says she's starting to want to leave East Chicago permanently.
Do you think there's a shortage of affordable housing in East Chicago?
Yes, absolutely. And losing West Calumet will be another blow to that shortage. HUD has said they don't expect to rebuild housing there. What's interesting to me about this is that the mayor actually had a similar concern when he ordered the place demolished last year. He said he was worried the EPA couldn't clean it up safely with people still living there, basically that it couldn't be salvaged, which, of course, the EPA disputes.
And we're going to hear more about that disagreement later in the program. But what it is that the EPA has now agreed that regardless of what happens with the demolition, they're going to clean that zone up to a residentially safe level, and the city has to decide what it wants to do after that. Has it made that decision?
They have not released any decision about a future use of that property. We know the mayor's been thinking about redevelopment in West Calumet for a long time. There was this meeting back in 2012 with the EPA where public records show Mayor Copeland said he was worried about the area becoming, in his words, a wasteland without really comprehensive cleanup. And there was a plan to remodel West Calumet Housing Complex before this all happened. But earlier this year, I talked to the consultant who wrote that plan. He's worked on redevelopment in other parts of the city, and he doesn't think that they can rebuild housing in West Calumet either.
And that, I guess, gets at a bigger economic question, which is how does this affect the city's economics writ large?
We don't really know yet. You know, populations are falling in a lot of cities like East Chicago in Northwest Indiana, and not just because of contamination issues. This is a post-industrial, economically depressed area. You know, Lake County, where East Chicago and places like Gary are, has a disproportionate impact from Indiana's property tax cap system. And cities really want to capitalize on being close to Chicago. They want to build housing for commuters. But those plans can take a long time to materialize. And they're not happening close to the Superfund site. You know, Keisha Daniels, she says she and her neighbors really feel like they're getting left behind.
So we heard both Keisha Daniels and Maritza Lopez say they want more communication from public officials. Why do they feel that is so important? Why do they need to have that touch going forward and for the residents to be keeping in touch with one another?
So for Keisha, at least, I think there's three big reasons. There's the health issues. You know, they want to keep each other posted on what they're experiencing and how they're getting tested. They also want to be seeing community solidarity. You know, Keisha wants her current and former neighbors out at protests. She wants them at public hearings. And then, like housing attorney Kate Walls said, you know, these are disadvantaged families who the government has asked to make some pretty hasty moves. So the government does have a role to play in getting these people any more help they might need going forward.
That's economics reporter Annie Ropeek talking about the West Calumet housing complex. Annie, thanks.
Happy to do it, Stan.
So there's one really clear example of the toll that all of this has taken on East Chicago, and it's at Kerry Gosch Elementary School, which sits inside the Superfund next to the now empty West Calumet housing complex. Kerry Gosch was abandoned only a week before school started last year, and staff there had to scramble to prepare an empty middle school for all the displaced students. We spoke earlier with Indiana Public Broadcasting education reporter Claire McInerney to hear more about how the lead crisis has disrupted education in East Chicago. Claire, thanks for being part of the program today.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Dan.
So let me start with this. The city had been fully informed about how high the lead and arsenic contamination was in May. Mayor Anthony Copeland announced he would evacuate the West Calumet housing complex in July. And Kerry Gosch sits right next to that housing complex. So what was going on there?
So this all kind of went down the week before school started. And so right, you know, before the first day of school, teachers and staff were moving all of the furniture and supplies to a new location, which was a building that was currently sitting vacant. It was a former middle school. So this whole past school year, they were in a brand new building. It was a little problematic, though, because they were bringing kindergarten through fifth grade kids into a middle school setting. So bathrooms, countertops, everything was geared toward bigger kids. So they had to do a lot of renovations to bring it back down for smaller students.
Were the lead levels that were found in the soil at the school as bad as they had been at the housing complex?
It was a little more contained in one part of the property, but like you said, the school sits right next to these apartments. There was just one fence dividing it. So Superintendent Paige McNulty made the call to move the school away from this area because lead can affect kids a lot worse than adults.
So whether it was the move or it was just the presence of the lead and the subsequent cleanup of it, how did that situation affect how kids were being educated in East Chicago?
Sure. Well, when I visited right before at the beginning of the new school year, as the cleanup was beginning, the move had already happened, Superintendent McNulty told me about some efforts to incorporate learning about lead and the cleanup into the school lessons to really try and take away the scary factor for the kids. For the school district, I would say the most significant thing has been financial. As we know in Indiana, we fund school districts based on their enrollment. And once the lead was announced that it was in the area, near the school, a lot of families left East Chicago and therefore the district. And so early this July of this year, McNulty said that they expected to lose 470 kids when school starts again this fall, which is a huge financial loss for the school district. And because so many kids left, the new Kerry Gosch building is now going to be a preschool center.
So as people may know, in Indiana, the money follows the child is the saying we always use. And so what's going on to try to help the financial situation of the district?
So last year, when they needed to do all these renovations to get the middle school ready for elementary school kids, McNulty got a disaster relief loan from the state to do a lot of that. And then she also was appealing to the legislature a lot this past session, asking them to keep funding the district as though their enrollment wasn't down almost 500 students. And that did pass is in effect for this coming school year. But after this coming school year, they might have to make some tough choices like layoffs or closing schools, but that nothing official has been announced yet.
Indiana Public Broadcasting education reporter Claire McInerney has been covering the educational situation in East Chicago as the last year has progressed. Claire, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
When we return, we'll hear from the EPA and from an environmental lawyer who represents residents in the Superfund. This is Blood, Lead, and Soil, A Year in East Chicago from Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome back to Blood, Lead, and Soil, A Year in East Chicago. From Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Back with me in the studio is reporter Nick Jansen, who we mentioned has been following the environmental side of this story. Nick, tell me how the cleanup process has been working.
You know, one thing I've learned about the Superfund program is that it's incredibly complicated, but the basics of how they actually clean up sites like this one in East Chicago is relatively straightforward. So once the agency tests the soil, knows which areas are contaminated and how much contamination there is, they come in, they dig out the dirty soil with a big backhoe, and they replace it with clean, lead-free soil and put down some sod, you know, remodel the yard. Typically, the dirty soil is then sent to a landfill. Now, different areas are cleaned up to varying standards in Superfund sites. So there's a lower threshold for residential areas. Those areas will be cleaner when the crews are done. There's a higher contamination threshold for industrial use areas. That's an important thing to remember because, as Annie alluded to earlier, and as we'll hear more about in just a minute, there's been a conflict about which standard should be applied to the West Calumet Housing Complex property.
And as we've heard throughout this hour, the problem at the USS Lead Superfund site, right, is the lead in the soil. But East Chicago also has a problem with lead in its water, too.
Right. So this is kind of a complicated story. East Chicago has lead drinking water service lines that connects the water main to people's homes. When EPA started preparing for Zone 2 and 3 cleanup last September, they started testing the drinking water. They wanted to get a baseline because they were going to test the water again after the cleanups were completed. That's a normal thing for the EPA to do because when you have all this heavy machinery moving around, vibrations from the construction can hit those service lines and cause lead scaling or buildup to knock off of the pipes and into the water. So through the course of these preliminary drinking water tests, the EPA found elevated lead levels in 18 homes. Remember, cleanup work hadn't begun yet, so this was not from the remediation. And this really alarmed the city because they thought they were in compliance with the state rules. The EPA had done a more thorough test than what the state requires, and that's how they were able to detect the lead in the drinking water when the state and city couldn't.
So what's being done to make the drinking water safer?
So the city is working to adjust their corrosion control. This is a chemical they add to the drinking water that basically coats lead pipes, and it prevents lead from scaling off and entering the drinking water. That can take a little bit of time for that chemical to work its way through the system. The state has also sent drinking water filters to for folks to attach to their taps. And the Indiana Finance Authority recently announced that they're providing $3 million to begin replacing lead service lines. And that work will be done in conjunction with EPA cleanup as much as possible to avoid tearing up yards more than once.
Let's talk about the EPA for a second, because as the cleanup process has unfolded in East Chicago, the EPA and other government agencies have taken a lot of flack for how this has gone. How does the EPA think it's doing?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we really wanted to find out for this program. Initially, we tried to interview Bob Kaplan. He's the regional administrator for EPA here. He's a guy we've spoken with many times before. Other outlets have spoken with many times before. But the EPA wouldn't grant us an interview with him. Instead, they offered us Albert Kelly. Albert is a former banker from Oklahoma who EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, who is also from Oklahoma, brought on as a special assistant. Kelly has come out to East Chicago before, though, so I asked him his initial thoughts on how the agency was handling the situation.
I think it's a disappointing circumstance that this type of situation occurs. When you see houses that are constructed on a lead smelter, why, there's just something wrong with that.
Yeah, so give us a quick update on those efforts. Where's EPA right now with regard to having the site cleaned up?
Well, we have been, we assessed the site. We've divided the site into three zones, one, two, and three. Generally speaking, the residential areas are in zones two and three. The HUD housing complex is in zone one. We are making substantial progress through the remediation of yards in zones two and three. We expect to continue that through this year until the season is no longer available for us to be working outside. And then we intend to complete this next, as soon as the spring thaw comes, we intend to get all the yards that have not been done completed. When I was there, I visited a couple homes, and I felt good about the product that we're leaving. So it's just a matter of getting to all of them.
And did the residents you met with feel good about the product too?
I think that they are very appreciative of the work that is being done. I think there remains to be concern about lead pipes and about residual lead. And so we are going to stay engaged until all of those questions are resolved and all of the concerns are taken care of. And the Superfund sites are very, very high on Administrator Pruitt's agenda. He has indicated that we're returning to our basic duties and our basic responsibilities here, which are protecting human health and cleaning the environment. And in so doing, we've elevated the Superfund cleanups to the top tier in the agency.
You had mentioned the West Calumet Housing Complex earlier that's operated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Over the past year, the city and the EPA have been going back and forth on whether to clean up that property to a residential standard. Recently, the EPA announced it would remediate it to the residential standard, even though the city hasn't shared its redevelopment plans yet. Why did the EPA agree to that standard before seeing how the city was going to proceed with development?
Well, I realize that the West Calumet Housing Complex has had some controversy over it. The EPA had absolutely nothing to do with having it vacated or determined to be raised. I think that the displacement of those families could have been prevented. We had a remediation plan that would have cleaned Zone 1 extensively and made it very habitable. So from our standpoint, we were prepared to remediate that just as we've done in Zone 2 and 3, but that's not our call. The reason we believe that that is the high standard that we can remediate it to is residential, and the decision was made that that would probably at some point in time be potentially there for residential expansion. Certainly the right thing to do is to clean it to the highest standard, and that's what we're doing because we don't want a replication of what's happened there now.
Where do you think East Chicago will be 1 year from now?
Well, I think 1 year from now, we should be finished with a remediation of the yards. I think, depending on what is done with the housing complex, we will still have work to do. If the residents were there and we were able to embark on remediation now, we would be able to go ahead and clean that site as well, which is Zone 1. However, if the property is going to be raised, that's going to take somewhere between 8 and 12 months to get that completely done. And so we will be standing by. First of all, we'll be monitoring to be sure that the areas that we've cleaned and the residents of East Chicago that are there in Zones 2 and 3 don't have contamination that leaks from the raising of the apartment complex. We're going to be monitoring that, but then when they finally get finished, we will have to go in and remediate it to our standards. So there will still be work to be done.
That's Albert Kelly, Senior Advisor to EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Mr. Kelly, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Nice to talk with you.
That's Albert Kelly from the EPA talking to our reporter Nick Jansen as our special coverage of Indiana Public Broadcasting's last year of reporting on the East Chicago contamination continues. Nick is still here with me in studio. Nick, Kelly has come to visit the site. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt was there in April. Have we seen this level of engagement before from top EPA officials?
No, to my knowledge, no one at that level during the Obama administration ever came to visit. Kelly has been to East Chicago a couple days after I spoke with him. He traveled to Chicago, where the EPA has their regional office for meetings about this site. Like you mentioned, Pruitt came to visit in April. He did annoy a lot of reporters by giving a very short speech and then leaving without taking questions. But remember, we heard from Maritza Lopez at the top of the show mention how grateful she was that Pruitt came to visit. And I think that is really the key thing here, that residents appreciate the FaceTime. Pruitt made this the first Superfund site he visited publicly. Like Kelly mentioned, he's been very supportive of Superfund. He's held it up as one of the agency's key missions. And that's meaningful, at least on the face of it, because Pruitt is a guy who has made a career of suing the EPA, especially over the agency's work on climate change.
So that's one of the agency's key missions. But President Trump has proposed drastic budget cuts to the EPA, a 30% cut to the Superfund program. How would all of that square up with what's going on in East Chicago?
Yeah, I asked Kelly that, and he said the EPA can only take the budget they receive and they don't make their own budget. And that is true, technically. But, you know, Pruitt has made himself out to be a key ally to President Trump. I'm sure it's not quite as simple as how Mr. Kelly represented it. But Kelly did say that the agency will continue to do the best job they can making these sites safe with whatever resources they do get from Congress.
And we heard him say the EPA will leave behind what he calls a good product when they're done cleaning up residents' yards. But does everyone agree with that assessment?
Well, I talked to an environmental lawyer who's been working with residents about how the EPA has handled this situation. Her name is Debbie Chisower. She's an attorney at Northwestern University's Environmental Advocacy Center. And here's what she had to say.
As you know, EPA waited more than 3 decades to address this site. So obviously, people have been in harm's way for all that time, and that's very upsetting, and people's health and lives have been affected because of that. Since the fall of 2016, EPA has really stepped up its engagement in the process. It's not enough in that it's still unclear whether residents will be fully protected when this cleanup is done, and whether all of the sites that need cleaning up will be addressed.
So you represent some of the residents in a lawsuit against the EPA. What are some of the things your clients are saying the EPA should have done on this site that they did not do?
Okay. We filed what's called a motion to intervene in a lawsuit that the United States Environmental Protection Agency filed against the polluters. This is a normal process at a Superfund site where EPA identifies the responsible parties and then sues them and then immediately files a consent decree, a settlement at that site. We believe that the settlement has already been changed in many ways and that there's an opportunity for residents by being an intervener in the suit can influence the process going forward. And the reason that we thought it was appropriate is based on the fact that the residents' interests haven't been taken into account in the past. So, for instance, an entire zone at the site. The residential area of the site is made up of 3 zones. One whole zone, Zone 2, was left out of the original consent decree, even though it was included in the original cleanup plan. Also, when this first started, indoor dust was not being addressed. Since this case became newsworthy and with advocacy, EPA has decided to add that to the cleanup, and that's critical. Again, though, residents have not had a say in that process of what the standards should be for indoor lead dust assessment and cleanup, and we believe that as party to the case, we could do more to influence that process.
Do you think there's something about the Superfund program or the law that sort of governs the Superfund program that needs to be fixed to prevent other sites and situations from kind of being as bad as this one is?
Yes. I think the Superfund program is broken. When it was enacted, the idea of the program was to clean up the most contaminated sites as quickly as possible and then to recoup those costs from the responsible parties later. And the idea was that there would be this Superfund that would be created by taxes on chemical and oil companies. And then that money would always be there when there was a site identified that needed cleanup. But in 1996, Congress let that tax lapse. And so since that time, the money has disappeared, and EPA is reliant on annual allocations, appropriations. So there's not enough money in the system to help clean up sites. And so the incentive is to negotiate a settlement first and then clean up the site.
If there was one thing you could sort of do about this particular situation in East Chicago to remedy it or make it better, what would that be?
It's really hard to make the residents whole at this point. I think a short-term or a partial fix would be to make sure that the cleanup is done in a way that will protect residents going forward. And I think it would be an ideal solution would compensate families that have been impacted for their health problems and ongoing medical expenses, and also to compensate families for the property loss.
Debbie Chisower is an attorney with Northwestern University's Environmental Advocacy Center. She's part of a legal team that's representing pro bono some of the residents in the USS Lead Superfund site in East Chicago. Debbie, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Nick.
That was environmental lawyer Debbie Chisawer speaking to our Nick Jansen, who's still with me in the studio. We're joined once again also by Annie Ropeek and Lauren Chapman as we near the end of this hour of special coverage from Indiana Public Broadcasting. The three of you have told us about the status of different parts of this story. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is working on approving the controversial demolition plan for the West Calumet Housing Complex. The EPA is cleaning up yards in the Superfund. Lawyers and residents are organizing for what to do next. And there are still more people in the Superfund getting medical tests done for lead and arsenic poisoning. I want to know what all three of you are going to be looking out for as we keep covering this story in the coming year. Questions that you hope will be answered, developments you're expecting to see. Lauren, let's start with you on that.
I really hope more residents will start to get answers about how this contamination has affected their health. There hasn't been a ton of research about how these metals all affect the human population together. So Purdue's future study may be groundbreaking research for contaminated communities like East Chicago. I'm also interested in the kind of support residents get for their health. A handful of residents we spoke to mentioned their interest in getting programs and clinics to help treat the long-term effects of lead and arsenic in their community.
Annie, what are you looking forward to learning?
So, of course, I want to see what happens with demolition at the West Calumet Housing Complex and with this idea of maybe helping the former residents there move again if they want to. I also went to the area's big annual Calumet Day block party recently, and some activists there were collecting information from people about what's happened to their property values. And a lot of residents were talking about when the city is really going to start focusing its redevelopment efforts on the Calumet neighborhood instead of historically where they've been focused, which is the lakefront, the north side of town. So I'll be really interested to see what revitalization, attracting residents and businesses might even look like in the Superfund area.
And Nick, you get the final word. What are you looking forward to trying to learn in the next year or so?
Well, one thing is to see if the cleanups are completed on time. Albert Kelly mentioned during my interview that zones 2 and 3 should be done by this time next year. Now that the EPA and the city have agreed to a cleanup standard for zone 1, hopefully work there will proceed in a timely fashion. Like Annie mentioned, everyone's waiting to hear what the mayor has in mind for redevelopment on that site. Bigger picture, though, America has a lead problem. I think East Chicago jumped into the news because the mayor ordered the evacuation of a public housing complex. But there's a lot of lead-contaminated Superfund sites in the country. There's a lot of places, old cities, highly populated cities that have lead infrastructure, just like East Chicago and Flint, Michigan. So if this Congress and President Trump actually do take up a big infrastructure spending plan, something I'll be watching out for is if there's a big appropriation for overhauling dated drinking water infrastructure.
And with that, we've reached the end of this special program. The story, though, does not stop here. Find a link at this station's website to our exclusive online content for this program. That includes a timeline of the lead crisis, an audio postcard of the Calumet Day celebration, videos, more of the interviews you just heard. There's also maps and photos and other documents. That's, again, all online at this station's website. You can join the conversation yourself on social media by using the hashtag #AYearInEC, and keep listening to this Indiana Public Broadcasting station for all of the latest news from East Chicago. Thanks to everybody who joined me this hour, Nick Jansen, Annie Ropeek, Lauren Chapman, and Claire McInerney. Our editor is Brandon Smith. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. You've been listening to Blood, Lead, and Soil, A Year in East Chicago, on this Indiana Public Broadcasting station.